And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Monday with plenty to get to for another busy weekend in the sports world. Coming up, winners and losers from Saturday. Plus, around these parts, Clemson, South Carolina, throw the Panthers in if you want. Unable to make anything very easy. The Braves are up 2-0. Now heading out to L.A. How should Braves fans feel after what happened a year ago? Plus, Ed Ogeron out of a job. We'll get to all of our takeaways from week 6 of the NFL season, running through each of the games from yesterday, as well as looking ahead to Monday Night Football. The Panthers continue to slide. Are we on our way to our first college football playoff with a mid-major? And a whole lot more over the next few hours. With you till 3 on this Monday, you can join the conversation throughout the afternoon as well. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. On Facebook at ESPN Charleston. Via email, studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com. Or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. The start of another week with plenty to recap from over the weekend. With you till 3, Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, what's going on? I know yesterday when I was doing some work on our sister station, WJNI, one of the guys who came in to do one of the shows, he's a Purdue man.
Oh.
So he's a happy guy.
You're not kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, big weekend for them.
And how about Jerome Ford at Cincinnati having an Al Bundy?
What was the Al Bundy? What did he have?
Four touchdowns in one game. Yeah, because his line about, I scored 4 touchdowns in one game.
That's
so
right.
Anytime someone has 4 touchdowns, I call it an Al Bundy.
That's the Al Bundy. So there you go. Not too bad. Speaking of which, let's dive right into it. Every Monday we come in after the college football weekend and the dust settles, and I give you my winners and my losers from the weekend. Beyond just the box score, I have plenty of each. As always, I have ordered them. Let's kick it off. It's time, as always, for our winners and losers from the college football weekend.
Here's what I want you to look at. There are winners.
You're all winners!
There are losers.
Well, I guess I'm a loser.
A loser.
And there are people who have not discovered how to win.
We always start with the winners. Number one, the biggest winner, Georgia, because they went and beat Kentucky, the number 11 team in the country, by 17 points, and it wasn't even as close as that final score. Kentucky got a late score, did something offensively, but Georgia to beat the next best team in that division by 17 like that to really dominate once again shows the gap between them and everybody else. Florida went out and lost a game they shouldn't have. Georgia handled Kentucky. South Carolina struggled with Vanderbilt. Missouri is moving in the wrong direction. Tennessee embarrassed themselves on Saturday, but Georgia got the job done and then some. Blowing out the number 11 team in the country, an undefeated Kentucky team. For Georgia, it's their national title to lose. Now, I don't know if they are going to win it, but it's on them to hand away that national championship. Now, as I've been saying for a week now since Alabama's loss, don't count out the Crimson Tide. I think it still comes down to Georgia and Alabama. From what we've seen so far this season, Georgia clearly is the number one team. They're on that top step by themselves. There is a gap, maybe small, between Georgia and Alabama. It's their national championship to hand away this year, which is why I said last week on the show, Thursday, Friday, whatever it was, there is more pressure on Kirby Smart specifically than anybody else in college football right now. But they handled Kentucky with relative ease. The defense continued to shine. Georgia continues to be the best team in college football. Which takes me to winner number two. It's the team right behind them, Cincinnati. And I think the other reason why Georgia's a big winner is because You saw Iowa get knocked off, right? We see these ranked teams, five more of them lost on Saturday. Alabama was the number one team a week ago. They got knocked off to an unranked team on the road that they shouldn't have lost to. Georgia was playing number 11 Kentucky. We've seen teams slip up every week. Georgia handled their business. The number two winner is Cincinnati, who now becomes the number two team in the country. Highest ranking for them in program history, as you would imagine. They blew out UCF. They've scored over 50 points in back-to-back weeks. They could have scored more if they wish. I had put that as a potential upset alert. Now, I didn't think Cincinnati would lose, but I thought you had to be careful. And I was wrong. That game was over quickly. Cincinnati was clearly the better team. They're the number two team in the country now. You can't get much higher. They're not going to catch up to Georgia, but it's hard to make the case to keep them out of the playoff at this point as a mid-major.
Now, here's something South Carolina fans from the mid-80s may want to warn Cincinnati about.
Uh-huh.
They're now number two in the country.
Yes.
Guess who their next game is?
Who?
Navy.
Oh. Navy is always tough to get ready for that option attack. Cincinnati, though, they've been dominant. Number two team in the country right now and would be a playoff team if the season ends today and would be, or should be, as long as they keep winning, a playoff team at year's end as well. The number three big winner, Mike Gundy. Remember, he was on the hot seat. Remember, people are so upset at Mike Gundy because he was wearing some random T-shirt he got about a specific news network. Well, we're not having that talk anymore. No longer on a hot seat. 6-0 this year for Oklahoma State. They're ranked number eight in the country, and they just came back to beat Texas on the road on Saturday. Now, for Texas, first year under Steve Sarkisian, they're still figuring out how to win. They blew a 21-point lead against Oklahoma. They blew another lead of double digits against Oklahoma State on Saturday. Oklahoma State ended that game on a 19-0 run. Now, it helps. Oklahoma State was coming off a bye week. They had an extra week to get ready, rest up, and prepare. Texas was coming off that emotional game against Oklahoma, but Texas had the lead, coughed it up. Oklahoma State gets the big win. And now, for the Big 12, it's going to come down to those two teams, Oklahoma State and Oklahoma. And this is great for the Big 12. Not only is Mike Gundy a big winner, the Big 12 could be a big winner in all this because you'll have those two play each other the final week of the regular season and then probably have to turn around and play one another the very next week in the Big 12 championship to decide which one of those teams potentially could go to the playoff.
Now, could Baylor still be a monkey wrench in all this?
Yeah, Baylor got a big win over the weekend. I haven't even looked at are they back in the top 25? Because they made a strong case to be ranked again.
Yes, they're number 20.
Okay, so they made it back into the ranking. So keep an eye out on Baylor. And I think Oklahoma State still has Iowa State as well, who's been disappointing this year. But there's a reason why many believe they could be a playoff team, so you always have to be careful of them. But we are on the way to having those two going up against one another. Oklahoma State potentially in back-to-back weeks decide the Big 12. Number four winner, Mel Tucker. I mean, you could say the state of Michigan because we're on our way to getting Michigan and Michigan State both undefeated in the top 10 playing one another on Halloween weekend. Michigan State now heads into their bye. Michigan plays Northwestern this week. Should be an easy win. Should be. But for Mel Tucker specifically, with the job he has continued to do at Michigan State, he is the coach of the year in college football. They beat Indiana on the road. Wasn't pretty. They actually got outplayed for a lot of that game, but still found a way to win on the road, avoid a potential trap game. And now Michigan State, you're undefeated, and you head into that Michigan game undefeated with an extra week to prepare. They have their bye week now, 2 weeks to get ready for Michigan, while Michigan has to play Northwestern. And then you come back the following week, you try to beat your rival Michigan with an extra week to prepare and rest up, and you're looking at Michigan State potentially going to the Big Ten championship. The other reason why Mel Tucker's the big winner, because the Ed Orgeron news as well. And if I'm LSU, Mel Tucker is on a short list of candidates for me. Now, for Mel, right, he was only at Colorado for 1 year. This is only year two of Michigan State. He could have a third job in 4 years. I don't know if that looks great. I mean, granted, they're all promotions. He's moving up the ladder quickly. But Mel Tucker should be on a list of candidates for LSU. He got a big win this weekend. He had a big job come open in the SEC. Mel Tucker should be sitting pretty high right now. He should be feeling pretty good. I'm sure he's going to get some calls this offseason from a few different people. His agent will. And his team right now undefeated in the top 10 with 2 weeks to now prepare for Michigan in what should be an undefeated matchup on Halloween weekend. The fifth biggest winner. Quarterbacks of the SEC, specifically Matt Corral and Bo Nix. Matt Corral was going to be overshadowed by everything else that happened in that game. Lane Kiffin's return, the ugliness at the end of that game, but Matt Corral was fantastic once again. And I think he is the number one quarterback right now in the country, or certainly when you look ahead to the draft. He had 30 of 62 carries for Ole Miss. So not only did he make plays through the air, on the road, in a hostile environment, he also had to do a lot of the work on the ground as well. He had half of their carries. All but 84 yards of Ole Miss offense went through the quarterback, Matt Corral, on the road against Tennessee. And they got a big win. He's playing really well. And Bo Nix, another big winner as well, quarterback of Auburn, as he posted his highest completion percentage on the road in his career, and he did it at Arkansas, a ranked team beating them by over two touchdowns. Arkansas, a good defense with a good defensive coach. And Bo Nix went on the road against a ranked team, beat him by over two touchdowns, had statistically the best road game of his career, and he has been better since his benching. Props or credit to Bo Nix. Came back and beat LSU on the road with a game-winning touchdown drive. 2 weeks later, he beats Arkansas on the road, scoring 38 points, beating them by over two touchdowns. He's playing much better since it looked like he potentially could lose his job. Plus, year one of Brian Harsin, probably getting more familiar and comfortable with the offense as the season goes on. Those two quarterbacks had big days on Saturdays and are having a couple of big weeks here. The sixth biggest winner in college football, Pittsburgh. I thought Pittsburgh was in trouble heading to Virginia Tech. There was no trouble. They blew out Virginia Tech by over 20 points, and now they set up an interesting game this weekend with Clemson because Pittsburgh has the third most points scored in the country. Kenny Pickett, their quarterback, is eighth in the country in passing yards. They're in first place in the Coastal, and now they get Clemson coming to their building Saturday, and Pittsburgh, last I looked, was favored by 3.5 against Clemson. First time Clemson will be an underdog, or already is an underdog, in an ACC game in 8 years. They head to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh favored by 3.5. It's a big game for the ACC standings. It's a big game for Pittsburgh. It's a very intriguing game because Pittsburgh has the third highest scoring offense. Well, what is Clemson known for this year? Obviously, their defense. One of the best in the country. Their offense is struggling. So I want to see this Pittsburgh offense against that Clemson defense because Pittsburgh has looked good of late, but they also did lose to a MAC team. You know, they barely got past Tennessee, which looks like a better win now than at the time, but they've been a little up and down at times, playing better in the conference lately. Quarterback's doing really well. I'm curious to see them at home Saturday against Clemson in the biggest game for Pat Narduzzi since getting there. Number seven of the big winners, UTSA. This is the first ever reference for the Roadrunners here on the Morrow Midday Show, I imagine. They beat Rice 45-0 on Saturday. But that's not why they were such a big winner this weekend. The reason was because they're ranked for the first time in program history. So congratulations to them. Over the past three seasons, they were a total of 8 games under 500. And this year, 7-0, just blew out Rice, ranked in the top 25. A great season so far for UTSA. I think that's what Texas, San Antonio, that's what they tell me. Congrats to the Roadrunners. Number eight of the winners, and the last winner on my list, Alabama, because they bounced back in a big way. Remember Nick Saban last week after they lost to Texas A&M? He said, well, you know, people now think we're not very elite anymore, whatever the exact quote was. Nobody thought that, but Nick Saban had that reason, like we've discussed in the past with Dabo, a reason to put the chip back on the shoulders of his players. The quote I always use, a college coach once told me, teams become a lot more coachable after a loss. Sometimes you kind of need a loss. Guys focus in a little bit more. They listen a little bit more. They work a little bit harder. And Nick Saban now has exactly what he wants. Those guys are going to work harder. They have a bye week coming up next week, so an extra week to work on some things. They went out there and beat Mississippi State by 40. Blew them out. And the defense that looked so poor against Texas A&M was excellent. Held Mississippi State well below all of their season averages. Held them to 9 points in their building. Bryce Young was fantastic. 4 touchdowns. Alabama looked good. Now, Mississippi State is no great team, but they did just lose on the road to Texas A&M, who was unranked. And they went on the road to Mississippi State and blew them out and just dominated them from the jump. So I think that game against Texas A&M, that was a bit of maybe the wake-up call Saban is going to use to their benefit now moving forward. And Alabama will get better as the year goes on. Good teams get better as the season moves forward, like Belichick and the Patriots usually do. And I think Alabama, same idea. And I didn't put them on my list, but since I usually include them as a loser, and I reference them almost every week on this segment or category, let me give a shout-out to UConn finally getting a win. They did not make my list of one of the biggest winners, but they were a winner for the first time in 2 years. 720 days since the last UConn win prior to Saturday. Now, granted, it was against Yale, and it wasn't some sort of math competition, but they still beat them. Hardly. It came down to the very last play at home for UConn against Yale, of all teams. It was still an embarrassing victory, but a victory nonetheless, their first in 2 years, led by a head coach who lives in Mount Pleasant. So, congratulations to my UConn Huskies. I did not go with the UConn Husky jersey today. because it's still embarrassing to acknowledge that you're a fan of UConn. Next up, Arizona. They've lost 18 straight games. They have not won a game in now over 2 years. It's been 107 weeks, or it will be at least 748 days between victories. So UConn, they got off the schneid. Now it's time for Arizona. 18 straight losses for Arizona. Can they now get their first win in 2 years? Off to the losers we go. I guess we could include Arizona, but they're not relevant enough to even make the list. I got eight losers as well. Number one, of course, Iowa. It was Purdue's first victory against a top two team on the road since 1974. And they're now ranked, Purdue is, for the first time in 14 years. Iowa was the number two team in the country. This was their season. This is their chance to make the playoff. Now, granted, their playoff hopes are not dashed just yet. They should still win their division. They could go to the Big Ten championship. And if they win that, I think you still put a one-loss Big Ten champion in like Iowa. But this was the concern. Even though this game, much like Alabama, right, this one loss doesn't end their season, but you come away more so with Iowa than Alabama with bigger concerns about them. Because for those who didn't buy into Iowa, and I've been pumping their tires all year, but the one concern for Iowa, kind of twofold. It was that the offense wasn't good enough. They were bottom eight this season in offensive yards. They have played on the shortest fields in the country in terms of best field position offensively to start drives because their defense is so good. Number one in the country in turnover margin. But that is a hard way to exist, to rely on. It's what I've always said. I've been saying all year about the Dallas Cowboys. And sure enough, they got a huge interception yesterday that helped swing that game in the fourth quarter. It's hard to rely on turnovers, though, week to week. It's hard to be a team that needs turnovers to win. And Iowa's kind of been like that. Didn't happen on Saturday. They were minus three in the turnover margin. They had four interceptions of their own on offense, and they lost. But Iowa's a team that needs to be plus two or three in the turnover margin instead of minus three. When they go minus three, they don't have the offensive firepower to make up that difference. So for Iowa, maybe they got a little exposed on Saturday. But their playoff hopes are still alive. Win out the rest of the way, you're still getting in. But that's a disappointing loss. Number two team in the country. We're talking about Iowa. I've been telling you they're underrated. It doesn't look good to then go out and lose to Purdue at home and lose like they did, where they really got controlled. I mean, their defense played well, but the offense was embarrassing, and Iowa lost by it was never really much of a game. They got beat by double digits. Tough loss for Iowa. But they still have some hope remaining to make the playoff. However, may have been exposed. Offense isn't good enough, and they need turnovers to win games. The number two biggest loser, Ed O. Even in a win, he's losing. He beat Florida. Great win. Can't celebrate because we get the news yesterday, and this was already known before they even kicked it off on Saturday internally. But we get the news yesterday. He's out at the end of the year. They'll let him finish out the season. He's not coming back next year. He'll get $17 million to go away at year's end. So whenever we talk about buyouts, especially when it comes to SEC teams, right? Oh, where are they going to get the money from? They'll always find it. LSU is willing to spend $17 million at the end of this year and then more money to go hire a new coaching staff just to move on from a guy that brought them a national championship 2 years ago. But since that national championship, Ed Orgeron, 7-8 against Power 5 teams. Not good enough. You can't be under 500 over a two-year window at LSU, especially because the fact that LSU still has, based off of recruiting rankings, the fifth most talented roster in the country. So it's not the players. The players are still there. The recruiting is still happening. You have the fifth most talented roster in the country, and you're under 500 the last 2 years? Can't happen. That's on the coaching. And when you're a head coach, and you don't run the offense or the defense, and you're not winning games either, what are you bringing to the table? So, Ed O, out by year's end for LSU, could become a little awkward these next few months. Gets the big win against Florida. Is, in fact, 19-10 against ranked teams in his career at LSU. He has had some big wins, but just not consistent enough. The program moving in the wrong direction. We were all just waiting. It was a matter of time before they were going to move on from him. He's out 2 years after the national title, like Gene Chizik a decade ago. The third biggest loser, the team I just mentioned, Florida. You can't lose to a coach who's already been fired. That's embarrassing. And for Florida, they still had some things they could accomplish this year. But that's a bad loss. And they made it interesting in the second half. But we got to that press box Saturday to get ready for the Citadel and Furman game. And we walked into the press box, and they have TVs in there, and they have the games on. And I saw that Florida was getting beat up by, what was it, over 20 points? And I thought, oh, my goodness. They were favored by 14. I thought Florida was going to blow out LSU. They have now lost back-to-back games against LSU in which they were favored by 2+ touchdowns each time. Can't happen. Florida is 2-6 in their last 8 games against Power 5 teams. And one of those two wins was against Vanderbilt. That's half a win. They're really 1.5-6 in their last 8 against Power 5 teams. They have 3 straight losses against ranked teams. There have been some bad losses the last 2 years. I'm a big Dan Mullen guy. I defend him. He's a great offensive coach. But his teams lose some games like this that you can't explain. That you shouldn't have never lost that game and shouldn't have never been getting blown out like that to a coach who was already fired. They knew it internally before that game Saturday. I guess credit to the guy still going out there and rallying for him. But Dan Mullen, that is an embarrassing loss. Number 4, the big losers, Tennessee fans. I don't need to explain it. I'm sure you've seen the highlights if you didn't watch it live. Embarrassing to be throwing things on the field. Somebody threw a golf ball at Lane Kiffin. You may hate the guy, but to throw a golf ball at somebody, right? Ridiculous. They're throwing water bottles as he leaves the field. Somebody threw a thing of mustard. I don't know how people got half that stuff even in the stadium. It's embarrassing. Just because you're unhappy with the calls, unhappy with how the game was going, there's like a 20-minute delay, throwing things on the field. They had to make an announcement. Josh Heupel's out at midfield waving his arms, trying to tell his own fans, stop throwing things, you hooligans. They had to get the players away from the sideline. They had to get the cheerleaders out of there. Just embarrassing. Absolutely. What was a great game, primetime game, SEC on Saturday night, to have it end like that, that was a black eye for the SEC. And especially, of course, Tennessee. But just an embarrassing moment. Be better. Right? Be better as sports fans. You go to a game, you're upset with the fans, you're upset with the game. Okay, whatever. Don't be throwing things at the other team or on the field. That's a joke. 5th biggest loser from Saturday, Malik Willis, quarterback of Liberty. He was Pro Football Focus's number 1 quarterback heading into the last couple of weeks. They believe he was playing the best in college football. There were talks about Malik Willis becoming the top pick in next year's NFL draft. But over the last 2 games, he's thrown 3 interceptions in each of those 2 games. He had 0 interceptions his first 5 games of the season, 6 the last 2 weeks, and they lost to Louisiana Monroe on Saturday despite being a 32-point favorite. This stuff can be very fickle. Ask Spencer Rattler and Sam Howell. His draft stock, Malik Willis, is taking a nosedive the last 2 weeks. 2 weeks ago, he was Pro Football Focus's number 1 quarterback in the country, talking about the number 1 pick. Now he's going out and throwing a lot of picks. 6 the last 2 weeks, lost as a 32-point favorite to ULM. Liberty scuffling right now, so is their quarterback. And right now, you look around the country, Matt Corral may be the only one. I mean, who do you look at and say, like, yeah, he's a really good quarterback. He is going to go drafted. Right? Congrats to the team getting him in the top 5. This is not a good quarterback class, as we continue to find out every week. Which takes me to the number 6 loser, Spencer Rattler. We talked about him last week, but then Caleb Williams went out there and had 5 touchdowns for Oklahoma as they blew out TCU, led by a good defensive coach, Gary Patterson. No problem for Caleb Williams. And despite Lincoln Riley saying, well, you know, they're getting split reps, we're going to use both of them, well, Spencer Rattler played 0 snaps. So, as I figured, that was all eyewash just to keep him around, keep him in the program, try to keep him satisfied. But as this thing unfolds, you'll see Spencer Rattler clearly the backup, and this is now Caleb Williams' team. Rattler will have to go somewhere else and try to improve his draft stock and image to return himself to an NFL quarterback somewhere else next year. 7th biggest loser from the weekend in college football, the ACC. In this sense, we had UNC and Miami play, and it was actually an exciting game. Came down to the final play. Both teams scored in the 40s. It was a great game, but it was irrelevant. The biggest story to come out of that game was the handshake. Mack Brown really enjoyed that handshake. Manny Diaz was not happy, and rightfully so. Diaz and Miami, they're 2-4 this year. He's 16-14 at Miami. Both he and Mack Brown have been disappointments. But that was supposed to be the game. This game, and I talked it up all summer, this was supposed to be the game. The winner of this game will go on and take Clemson in the ACC title game. It's going to be a lot of fun. And yet here we are. These two teams are huge disappointments. They played each other on Saturday. Outside of their fan bases, nobody really cared because it doesn't mean anything in college football this year. That was supposed to be a big game for the ACC. Instead, a huge missed opportunity. And lastly, my 8th loser, yes, the Gamecocks. 18-point favorites at home. It took a last-second touchdown drive against Vanderbilt with a quarterback change to win that game, to beat Vanderbilt, who hasn't won a conference game in who knows how long. And I guess you could zero in and say more specifically Luke Doty. I know he got banged up there, but even based off of performance, you know, probably should be without the job for the time being. Had a couple of huge interceptions there, some big mistakes throughout that game. They only managed, I mean, with Doty on the field, with 14 points against Vanderbilt at home. That was just an embarrassing performance. Even in a win, that was a bit of a loss for South Carolina. You beat Vanderbilt, you get the win. That's most important. 4th win of the year. They exceed the Vegas win total preseason. But that's one of those games you feel out, you come out of like feeling bad. You got the win, but you feel almost worst off for it. That was an ugly performance. And now Zeb, after the touchdown-winning drive, will be the starter this week for the Gamecocks. Luke Doty has made clear so far he's not the guy to take you where you want to go. And even in a win, kind of felt like a loss for the Gamecocks on Saturday. My winners and losers, plenty of each from college football Saturday. When we come back, speaking of those Gamecocks, can never be easy around here. Comes down to the final minute for both Syracuse, or I should say for Clemson. Yes, Syracuse, but we don't really care about them. Comes down to the final minute for both Clemson and South Carolina, and it really shouldn't have been the case. We'll get to that next. It's the More Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the More Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. This could be an appropriate song when talking about the weekend for Clemson and South Carolina, because they did get wins. But are you really feeling that good about said victories?
It could also be appropriate for the Citadel losing to a rival.
Yeah.
And what are you doing today? You're wearing a Minnesota Vikings jersey, but it is purple.
It's true.
And you're supposed to be the voice of the Bulldogs.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
Well, it's radio. Nobody knows.
They do now.
Yeah. They can't actually see it, though. They can't confirm, so they don't know. Joe's telling lies, that's all. Yeah. So I came in, of course, in my Vikings jersey. Look, the Vikings, I only wear the jersey maybe sometimes on game day, although I am very superstitious in the sense that whenever I wear my team's stuff, they lose if I wear their apparel during the game. So if I watch a Red Sox game, I don't wear Red Sox stuff. When I watch the Vikings, I stopped wearing Vikings stuff during the game, usually. Unless I'm, like, there in person, then I got to represent. So I usually only wear the jerseys. Again, we're rolling with Fran Tarkenton again this week. Usually only wear it after wins. So, cut me some slack. I get to wear it, 8 times a year with my Vikings jerseys? So I had to go with it. Tough loss for the Citadel Saturday against Furman. That's one of those games where, obviously, they lose to a rival. They lose back-to-back games. You want to win every time you take the field. But that's one of those that is even more frustrating, because not only is it a loss against Furman, but they really beat themselves, the Citadel did. Right, where Furman beat them 24-14. Furman had two big plays on offense. Otherwise, they had, I think it was 148 yards of offense the entire game. They averaged 3 yards per play, which is not good. But they had two big plays, a 90-yard run and a 58-yard touchdown pass that was a little dump off to the tight end in the flat, and he just broke free and ran to the house. And then they missed two field goals, the Citadel did. They had three turnovers. There were some costly penalties. It's just you shot yourself in the foot too many times. They scored in their first possession. Didn't score again until about 10 minutes ago in the fourth quarter. They went, almost three quarters without any points. Frustrating game if you're a Citadel fan. Not just because you lost and you lost to Furman, but you watched that game like, man, we kind of beat ourselves. We were the better team tonight. We should have won. And that's what's more frustrating. When you lose to ETSU, and you come out of there and think, like, hey, they were just a better team. What do you expect? Those losses are a little more easier to swallow. But when you lose a game like that against Furman, where it was there for the taking, and you can't take it, you hand it away, it's like, oh, man, right? Those are the ones that leads to the sleepless night after. Like, oh, what if this was different? What if we didn't do this? Oh, what if this happened? Oh, so many plays you think back to. You lose to a team that's just better than you, you can get over that quick. Like, hey, they were just better than us. Nothing we could do. We played a good game. They played even better. But when you shoot yourself in the foot, that's obviously the one that's tough to swallow. Now, in regards to South Carolina and Clemson, man, at least they both won. But two wild games this weekend. I am a fan of the Vikings, the Red Sox. I make that well known. And they seem like they can never make it easy, especially the Vikings. Five of the Vikings' six games this year have come down to the literal final play. Like, literally, the last play of the very game. It has come down to it. 5 of 6 games. They give me a heart attack every week. Clemson and South Carolina, similar this weekend. Clemson, it comes down to that missed field goal in the final minute for Syracuse. Hey, that's what happens when you play. I do not understand this about coaches. And again, let me bring it back to my Vikings because I'm still a frustrated Vikings fan on this Monday. Why do you continue to play for long field goals? I don't get it. Kickers are the least reliable person on the field. Right, put the ball in the hands of your offense and go out there and make a play. Be aggressive. Go for the jugular. Minnesota does it every week. More on that later on with our Week 6 takeaways. But for Syracuse, you settle for a 48-yard field goal. You miss it. It's kind of like, well, what do you expect? Especially in college. I mean, that's not an easy kick in the NFL. I know we've been spoiled by kickers that we assume anything, you know, under like 55 yards should be a gimme. 48 yards is not an easy kick, even if it's indoors. And especially for college. We're talking about Syracuse. This is not Alabama. This is not even a top college program. Talk about Syracuse. You want to rely on their kicker to make a 48-yarder with the game on the line to beat Clemson at home. What are you doing? Right, be a little more aggressive instead of relying on that 48-yard field goal. And Dino took the timeout. You know, it didn't match up, the clock management. Now, here's how it sounded. This was the Syracuse radio call. Matt Park on the call for Syracuse in the Carrier Dome on Friday night. Clemson just able to survive another close one. Fortunate to get out of there with a victory. And here's how that field goal sounded on the Syracuse side.
Who's been extraordinary, but needs to hit a big one right now. 7 out of 10 in field goals this season. Operation clean. Kick. Good. It's got to go. It's nowhere near. It may have been blocked near the line of scrimmage, but that one just did not have any chance. It had nothing on it. 38 seconds left, and Clemson's going to win the game.
You can hear the clear disappointment, of course, in the voice of Matt Park there after that missed field goal. By the way, Syracuse is another one of those teams that makes nothing easy. 4 straight games decided by a field goal? That has to be some sort of record. And they've played 4 straight games that have come down to 3 points. It is amazing. It has to be incredibly frustrating as a fan of Syracuse, knowing that you could be, you know, you're so close, and yet you can't pull it off. You're still finding ways. You're still trying to figure out how to win. Now, they did win a couple of those games. It's not like they lost all 4, but they are under 500 on the year. All of their losses have been by 10 points or fewer. It gives you some hope as a Syracuse fan after how bad that program was a year ago, but it's also got to be so incredibly frustrating. That every week it's like, oh my gosh, so close, and we still can't pull it off. And for Syracuse's kicker, he's 1 for 5 now on kicks 40 yards or longer. And you played for a 48-yard field goal. Makes no sense to me. On the flip side, I always like the idea of not icing the kicker, as was done there, because they're expecting it. And especially if you're the road team and they're the home kicker, your crowd's not there. So don't let them go up there and kick it. They're probably expecting you to ice them. The whole reason why we started icing kickers was to break the norm. Was because typically you went up there and kicked it. So now they want to take a timeout and make you think about it. But since everybody ices the kicker, now to break the norm, you don't call a timeout. People are giving Saban a hard time for not icing the kicker the previous week against A&M. Right? When you are on the road, don't do it because it's his crowd. They'll be quiet for him. Yeah, he'll be thinking about it, but it's not the same as when you're on the road and they're expecting you to ice them. And so maybe they go through it, you know, they half-ass it, the kick, because they're expecting you to call a timeout the last second and for it to not count. No, play mind games. Don't ice them and make them go out there and just kick it the first time. They're expecting you to call a timeout. That's now the new mental head game. But Clemson fortunate to get out of there with a victory. It's amazing to believe they were still favored by 14. Vegas is giving you free money with Clemson every year. They still haven't adjusted to them. Stop making them these big favorites. They can't even score enough points in the game to run away. And that was the case again on Friday, where it seemed like it was 1 step forward, 2 steps back, and most notably on 3rd down. They take a sack on a 3rd down. There'd be a penalty on a 3rd down. You drop a pass on a 3rd down. Right? A snap a little off the mark on 3rd down. Somebody slip, whatever it was. It just seemed like, you know, it's talk about shooting yourself in the foot and on those most important downs. Dabo said after the game, one of the quotes that stood out, he said, right, there was a play we designed that had 3 people for 1 blocker, and we still didn't block him. We drew up a play where we designated 3 of our guys to block 1 of their guys, and we still failed. We still didn't get the job done. Speaks to just the struggles of this offense. It's just out of sync. It's out of whack. Right? They make too many mistakes. I don't know if it's a talent problem, a coaching problem. It's just maybe bad luck at times. But every time they need to make a play, it's 1 step forward, 2 steps back, and they manage just 17 points against Syracuse and fortunate to get out of there with a victory. They play nothing but close games, both those teams. Then you have the Gamecocks, favored by 18 against Vanderbilt. Remember Shane Beamer said this last week, I guess I should have listened to him. He knows his team better than I do. He sees them every day in practice. I thought this was just being nice, that this was just coach speak. This was Shane Beamer last week in his press conference when talking about Vanderbilt.
They had opportunities against Florida last weekend, 14-0 going in to score, and they turned the ball over. And then right before the half, they got a first and goal on the one-yard line and aren't able to punch it in for a touchdown. You get a score there, and who knows what happens. So they're a team that's improving by the week. That's obvious when you turn on the video, and has a lot of fight in them. On the road against Colorado State early in the season, down 14-0, and came back and won the football game. So we expect another physical four-quarter battle this Saturday in Columbia, and off to a great start in practice this week. And looking forward to Saturday.
Certainly was a four-quarter battle. I thought he was just being nice, you know, trying to pump up Vanderbilt. This and that. Oh, they do this. Well, they're good too. They're better than their record indicates. It's going to be a tough game. Yeah, and it ended up being exactly that. They were pretty fortunate to get out of there with a victory. Zeb came in. I don't know what Vanderbilt was doing defensively. They made a guy come off the bench way too comfortable on that final possession. Didn't blitz him. Rushed only three. They were trying to play coverage. You got to speed him up a little bit. Coming in cold off the bench. Hasn't played in a couple weeks. I know he's a veteran. Maybe not with his program, but, you know, he is in his 20s. He is a coach. But, you know, come after him a little bit. And props to Zeb for leading them down that drive and getting that game-winning touchdown, because otherwise that would be an embarrassing loss, favored by 18 at home. Which, as I said on the show Friday, that number is way too large, but it still should have been a pretty easy win for South Carolina against Vanderbilt. Did you watch that game? That team is lousy, Vanderbilt. That should not have come down to the final minute to win. It is a win, but it's one of those wins that you come away not feeling as good about. Yeah, you got the win, you're 4-3, but you come away and you're kind of feeling nasty about it. So the Gamecocks get that win, but again, offensively, you manage just 14 points until that final possession, 14 points in the first quarter, can't score again afterwards, and Luke Doty with a couple of more turnovers, a QBR of 27, Zeb Nolan will start this week. I've been saying throughout this season, Zeb does probably give you a better chance to win, but this year, year one of Shane Beamer isn't so much about winning. It's about development. It's about the future, and so I would, if healthy, right, assuming he's healthy, I would continue to start Luke Doty, but I think you already have the answer at this point anyways. And maybe he isn't your guy moving forward. Because that, to me, is what this year was about. The most important questions to answer for the Gamecocks, number one, is Shane Beamer the right guy? Is Shane Beamer capable of winning? And you won't see that in wins and losses, but you'll see that in how he manages games. Is he capable of being a good head coach in the SEC? Because he's never done it before. That was question number one that needs to be answered. And so far, I haven't seen enough that's turned me off. He made some questionable decisions Saturday. Right? You go for it on 4th-and-4 instead of kicking the field goal to go up 2 touchdowns in that second quarter. Then Vanderbilt comes back, scores. It changed the whole game. All right. But I can't fault the guy for being aggressive. I probably would have kicked the field goal, but I do like when coaches are aggressive, even if it's to a fault at times. But question number one, you had to answer, does this guy know what he's doing? Or at least show improvement over the course of the year that you can trust he will know what he's doing in the SEC. Question number two, because it's the most important position, do we have a quarterback of the future already on the roster? Do we have that guy? You know, Zeb Nolan is not that guy for the future. Is Luke Doty? And so far, I don't think you've seen anything that would make you believe like, oh yeah, he's going to lead us to the promised land in the next couple of years. But those are the two questions you have to answer. And you probably come away from Saturday not feeling too good about either of those questions. I know a lot of people are down on Shane Beamer. I know a lot of people were ripping a lot of his decisions Saturday. It should not have come down to that final minute at home against Vandy. You have to have patience with year one of a new coach rebuilding a program, but you have to answer those two questions. As you watch along, do you see maybe not right now, but eventually this will be the right guy at both the head coaching job and the quarterback spot? Don't think you have the quarterback. And I think it's too early to truly make some sort of determination one way or another on the head coach. Coming up, the Atlanta Braves. 2-0, heading to L.A. Back-to-back walk-off victories. We'll hear how it sounded for the Braves, and also, after what happened last year, are you able to get excited right now as a Braves fan, or do you still have to be very cautious here moving forward against the Dodgers? We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, the Braves are 2-0, up 2-0 in the series with the Dodgers. Are they a team of destiny? Can you get excited yet if you're a Braves fan after what happened a year ago? Get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Ran through our winners and losers earlier. Touched on Clemson and South Carolina and another wild weekend of college football. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. Speaking of wild, the Braves, to win the first two games of a series on back-to-back winners, I haven't seen the last team to do that. I know the Braves did it about 30 years ago. So I'm sure it's not very common to win back-to-back playoff games, especially to start a series the way that they've done it in dramatic fashion. And the Braves, we know, are under 500 till August, struggling, underperforming. As I was saying, and I just got a seat at the table, and now in the NLCS up 2-0, two wins away from the World Series. And the way that they've been winning, these two walk-offs, and the come-from-behind victories of late, it almost has a sense of that team of destiny, especially if you can go on and beat the Dodgers, who have the second-best record in baseball and almost 20 more wins than you. In fact, this is the third time in baseball playoff history that you have a matchup like this, where there's a team with home field advantage because they won the division, and they get to play a team that had 18 or more victories than them, but were a wild card. It's only happened two other times. And in those two other instances, the team with the better record, despite not having home field advantage, still won. So for the Braves, if they were to win this series, it would be something we haven't seen before. We're in a playoff series. A team that had 18 fewer wins, at least 18 fewer wins than another, goes on to actually win the series, even if they have home field advantage. And another number to throw your way, the team that wins game two of the NLCS historically goes on to win the series 63% of the time, which seems random. But the Braves not only won game two, but they're up 2-0. And so they head out to L.A., and you know this series is definitely coming back to Atlanta. When you're the road team, you want to split those first two. Like in the ALCS, the Red Sox very easily could be up 2-0 in the Astros right now. But at minimum, you have to split so that you could try to go win it at home. When you're the home team and you begin with the first two at home, well, when you win both, right now you guarantee that you're coming back home. And that, of course, is very important. And when you look at the Braves and the way they've won, Jason Stark did a great job putting together. He writes for The Athletic. He's been on the show before. One of the best guys in covering baseball. He's been doing it a long time. He did a great job of looking up how historic these wins have been for the Braves in this sense. In Game 1, the Braves won despite striking out 14 times and walking zero times. And they still won. Baseball in 2021. Strike out 14 times, zero walks, you still win a playoff game. And then in Game 2, the Braves walked 9 batters. They hit another one, so that's 10 free passes, and still won the game. So Jason did some research on this. Before last night, teams that had walked 9 or more batters in a playoff game were 10-32 all time. 10-32. The Braves, despite that history, still victorious last night. And then additionally, teams that walk 9 or more and also hit a batter, like the Braves did last night, all time in playoff history, 1-11. The Braves won by doing that last night. Take it a step further. If you narrow that down to Braves history, the last time the Braves won a game in which they issued that many walks and hit batters in a 9-inning game, you have to go back to 1977, regular season or postseason. So the Braves did something to win a playoff game that they haven't done at all in over 40 years. And since the All-Star break of 1977, the Braves' record in games that fit this description, 3-63 all-time. And yet they do it against the second-best team in baseball based off of record and still win a playoff game. The way that they've won these two games and the way that the pitching staff has performed most notably, especially the bullpen, they went a stretch there where their relievers combined for over 18 innings without allowing a run for this Braves bullpen that has been an issue at times over recent seasons. The way they're winning, how they're playing, these comeback victories, these dramatic walk-off wins, you take the first two. This Braves team, we throw that word around a lot about destiny. I mean, it almost feels like it at this point. But if you're a Braves fan, you know you can't get out in front of your skis just yet. Because despite that stat I told you about, you know, winning game two and going on to win the NLCS, well, the Braves last year were in the same spot and led 3-1 against the Dodgers and coughed up that series. Now, no team has ever come back from a deficit in back-to-back years like this, like the Dodgers would. I don't know how many teams have even been put in this position, but no team has ever done it in back-to-back postseasons, falling behind like this in the NLCS and come back to win. So if the Dodgers pull off a comeback in this series, they will have done something that we've never seen before. Falling behind like this, 2-0, back-to-back years, come back to win the series to go to the World Series. So that's what's on the line for the Dodgers. Last year, they were the 14th team to ever fall behind 2-0 in a best-of-seven series and come back and win it. And in any playoff round, not just NLCS. No team, as I said, has ever done it back-to-back years. So the Dodgers will try to do it and try to do it against the same team. So if you're a Braves fan, you could be having flashbacks to last year and not get too out in front of yourself, not get too excited about this. But what a start to the series, to win those two and the way they did it. First time the Braves strung together back-to-back walk-off wins in the playoffs since 30 years ago this same week. Go back to the 91 World Series, which is going on this week, and they won on back-to-back walk-offs in Game 4 and 5. Of course, didn't win that series either, though. An exciting start to this series for the Braves, but still be cautiously optimistic based off of what we saw last year and the fact that the Dodgers now are heading home and are, on paper, the best team in baseball. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. Jonathan in Goose Creek is with us. Jonathan, what's going on? How are you?
Good afternoon, Luke.
What's going on?
Not a whole lot. You kind of stole a little bit of my thunder. I was going to tell you, I think the last time I remember back-to-back walk-offs was in 91. It wasn't the Braves doing the walking off, though. It was the Twins in the greatest World Series ever played.
Yeah.
Game 6, I think it was Kirby Puckett hit the home run. And Joe Buck with the "we'll see you tomorrow night" mm-hmm. Call. And then the Game 7 walk-off in the 10th inning. That's the last time I remember. Now, there might have been another series, but that's the last time I remember back-to-back walk-offs in the same series.
Yeah, and what?
91.
Right.
With Twins.
And as you said, what a great World Series.
I told my dad about a month ago that this Braves team kind of reminds me a little bit of that Cardinals team maybe about 10 years ago that won like 84 games in the regular season. And really was outmatched in every round of the playoffs and somehow or another found a way to win the World Series. And I told my dad, I said, this Braves team kind of reminds me of that Cardinals team. They're going to be underdogs in every series, but I just have a little bit of a feeling this could be the Braves year. And I told him that about a month ago. I don't know what it is. It's just I think Fried was starting to – come into form. Charlie Morton is a workhorse, and you know if Will Smith can just figure out a way to figure out that ninth inning.
Yeah,
I think this team could do it. I really do. Lou Jackson last night. I'm not going to put that on him. That was just a little bloop, you know, that just fell right in front of the center fielder. But he's been lights out all season. You know, if they can figure out the ninth inning, Freeman's going to get some at some point in this series. So I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't win this in five or six games. They got going tomorrow night. So they could go up 3-0. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they go up 3-0 and not even come back to Atlanta until they play the series. I mean, that's a little optimistic that this is looking like a team that just determined to win. They wanted the Dodgers. Just to get a little bit of that taste out of their mouth from last year.
Yeah. Hey, they wanted the revenge. So far, so good. We got to run. Hour 2 next.